The only access I remember very distinctly was around back in the house. And as soon as we open the door, without giving too much detail, when you arrive on site for an unattended death and a decomposition, there's a very, very specific odor. And you'll never forget it once you smell it the first time. And as soon as we opened the door, we knew immediately this was more than what we were initially told on the phone.
Hey everyone, Alex here with the Living in Denver podcast. Welcome back. And today I am super excited to be joined by Krista and Matt of Bio1. And if you don't know who Bio1 is, they solve some of our lives' toughest decisions, our toughest situations that we might come into, when it comes to moving, selling a house, whether it's from all the way from meth remediation, hoarding situations, accidental death, suicides, tough conversations to have, but it's a reality that some of us will have to face. So thank you again, Krista, Matt, thanks for being on. How are you guys doing today?
Doing great. We're so glad to be here. Thank you so much for having us, Alex.
Great. I am excited to talk about this. So I'm going to try to keep things, as surface level as possible. I know with this sort of business, there's, maybe some situations that hit close to home for people. Leaving out people's names and, homes and specifics, and I'll try to be gentle on that. But let's start with kind of what you do overall. Give us your story. How'd you get into this business? Like, talk to me there. Start wherever you want to start.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm from Colorado. Grew up here in Littleton, went to CSU. And Matt and I met out here a long time ago now. And we fell in love, got married in 2012. And Matt is actually from Asheville, North Carolina. So just after we got married, we decided let's go out to North Carolina, see what we think. He still has family out there. And there were some business opportunities out there. So in the last 8-9 years, we spent in Asheville. I was in the healthcare business, working for the local healthcare system. And Matt was in automotive. And those are really hard industries to feel like sometimes you're making a difference. No one is excited, obviously, to go to a hospital. That's a really, tough situation that they're probably facing. And then let alone bills and navigating that industry can be really, really challenging. And then automotive, buying a car can be similar to real estate. It can be a long process. And so we were looking for something different. We were looking for ways that we can figure out how do we give back to the community? How can we do more? And also, what if we were our own bosses? And I found Bio1 online while looking at a friend's profile who was heavily in the industry. And I sent it as a joke. I said, well, it can't get any worse. We could always clean up blood for a living. And it actually ended up checking all the boxes for us.
Hmm. Yeah, there were a lot of different things we were trying to achieve. And when we originally reached out to Bio1, they said they had an opportunity in Asheville. So we did a little bit more due diligence and kind of jumped in with both feet. And we've been doing it for almost 5 years now.
Yeah. So in 2020, we saw that there was a Colorado office for sale. And our heart is so much in Colorado. We still have so many great friends out here. This is where we met. This is where I'm from. And the Asheville office still is running great. It's kind of one of those things as a business owner. It's a dream scenario where you have a great team. They're running it. You can advise, but you don't have to be there. And out here, we really wanted to build up the Colorado office. So about 2 years ago, we moved back. And we are now boots on the ground here and just continuing to ramp things up and let people know and educate the community that we're here to help. And help first is the most important part of our business. So you mentioned a little bit, we do the meth and fentanyl remediations. We help with some really sensitive situations, unattended deaths, if someone dies by suicide. We help with homeless encampments, and we do smaller things like mold remediation. We can help with rodent dropping cleanup or dog urine feces, all of the fun stuff that you probably don't talk about at the dinner table.
Yeah. Yeah. No. And I know I've had to use a service like yours in the past for a client of ours, which was a hoarding situation. And it was one of those, you know, I didn't know what I didn't know. Right. And it started bringing up a lot more questions about much more kind of, you know, intense situations that are, you know, beyond just getting rid of stuff out of a home. So you had mentioned homeless encampments, and, you know, while checking out your business, you know, I didn't come across that, but I know that's been a real hot button issue in a lot of cities across the country right now. So, I mean, talk to me a little bit about that part. Like, who reaches out to you? Like, how does that whole process work? Cause I've seen it in action and it's very different, and, you know, just over the last couple of years because it's become a problem. Like, talk to me about that and how that goes.
There's a lot of opinions out there too, right? Especially in Denver and in Colorado. There's some big declarations to figure out the homeless population and immigrant crisis here. Matt actually works really closely with Castle Rock in helping with, you know, making sure that people are relocated in a compassionate way, but then also in a safe way, in a way that meets, you know, what they're trying to accomplish in the city. So Matt can talk really good about that and what we've done.
Yeah, absolutely. So we help them craft their policy. We kind of walk them through some of the hazards that are associated with it. We've seen it done different ways. We've seen folks just go with bulldozers to encampments and they get, you know, whatever contents are there, as well as a bunch of dirt, rock, whatever. And it's, I guess, a quick way to handle it. But the compassion component of that is not quite so great. So we've worked with a number of different municipalities, city governments, stuff like that, to try to figure out what is the way to do this that allows them to try to send the message of, well, we can't just have you occupying public spaces and creating potential safety issues. Cause, you know, we're finding needles, we're finding latrines. You know, there's all sorts of stuff that we end up finding as we do those things, and they're public health hazards in the public spaces. And so trying to figure out how to balance that with, we need to keep people safe and we need to keep the homeless population safe as well. I mean, having a bunch of needles around your house, for example, you know, that's not going to be great around a tent, stuff like that. They can create injuries for themselves. And so, you know, again, it's striking that balance to try to make sure, again, that we're not getting rid of anything that's important. So, you know, as we go through, we're going through efficiently, and this applies to, you know, hoarded houses or any of our sites as well as encampments, but we're trying to go through things and try to figure out, is there something in here that somebody needs or that somebody could use to, you know, survive, especially in the winter when it's cold. And so, you know, we'll maintain certain pieces of property. And in certain cases, some jurisdictions will inventory that for a certain amount of time and we'll post inventory lists, and folks can come back and reclaim some of those items. We've found IDs, wallets, stuff like that. Typically, we're turning that back into law enforcement when we're doing that for the homeless encampment side of things. But, you know, it's trying to strike that balance of, you know, we need to get something done very efficiently and very quickly, but people are people. They're human beings. You can't just bulldoze somebody's life away.
Absolutely. And there's usually a good amount of notice to let folks know that we are going to be coming in to clean it. Mm-hmm. So it's not like we just show up and everybody's still there. There's, you know, it depends on the, as Matt said, the municipality and their procedures and their programs. But, you know, there's at least a good 48 hours, if not more, to get advance warnings, grab your things, you know, make sure you're collecting everything. And then here's the next place that you need to be going, or here's some resources for you. So the good news is too, I mean, on our side, we also want to make sure it's a safe environment for our team. We certainly don't want to be showing up and having any conflicts or arguments, things like that. We're just there to make it safe and make sure that we're doing a good job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you'd also mentioned who reaches out to us for those types of things. I do get some calls from time to time. Even got one yesterday from someone in Arvada who was looking to kind of make a report and say, hey, listen, this is a dangerous condition. And it can be municipalities. It can be CDOT. It can be, you know, the government agencies, but it also can be private property owners as well. And so that's, you know, what we've found in some cases in some of the jurisdictions we work with is they've focused a whole lot on the public spaces. And so people move around. And then the next thing you know, you've got private property owners calling as well. So it really can be anybody. I do advise most people, like, whoever can authorize the work needs to be the one to contact us. So, you know, as far as the general public reaching out because they see something, typically I'm guiding people to go back to the non-emergency line of law enforcement, code enforcement. Sometimes we'll get involved in those types of things. But, you know, if from a public reporting perspective, I'm not necessarily the first stop. But again, I'm going to try to point you in the right direction so that, you know, everything can get handled appropriately.
Yeah. Yeah. So with what you guys do, I know there's a lot of moving parts to it. There's a lot of emotional challenges that you might face, whether that's from, you know, the person that owns the property, whether that's a loved one that's taken over the property. Like, I'm sure you face some unique challenges that most people haven't even thought of or considered. But what are a lot of the big challenges that you see? You know, maybe we transfer back more to specific on house situations versus, you know, the bigger city homeless issues. But like, yeah, what are you seeing there as far as your most common challenges that you have in your business helping people?
Oh, I don't know if I want to call it a challenge, but it's certainly just the landscape of our business is there is not one day that is the same. So it's not like there's a checklist that we can follow and this is the tried and true scenario for every single person that we're helping. Everybody has different situations, different needs, different wants. What we're trying to remediate and help create a safe space for can be completely different from what we saw the day before. So I think it's interesting in a sense of not every single day is going to offer you the same type of job and the same type of work. But it also can be challenging because coming up with solutions and also making sure that people feel comfortable with what we are doing and what we're proposing to do. It can be different strategies and different tactics of communicating. I think the most consistent thing is that you have to learn in this industry is coming forward with compassion. Sometimes people just want to be heard and you will spend 30 minutes listening to someone on the phone or in person. They're going through maybe a traumatic moment and they're following, you know, the path of trauma and coping mechanisms is all over the place. And so really just being open to supporting, listening, asking them questions and trying to understand and piece together a plan that meets their needs and wants that also aligns with the safety that we need to provide and the cleanup that we need to provide.
Yeah.
What so else would with you add to that? Anything?
Not really a whole lot. I mean, everything, the way I go into a week, a lot of times I have a certain idea of the way the week's going to look. And then, you know, life happens and the phone rings and everything changes. And so it isn't challenges. It's just different. And it's just custom. And so we handle, you know, each situation. We try to be fairly consistent with how we go about the process, but we do tell everybody, you know, everything we do is customizable and I'm going to tell you what I think we should do. And then, you know, that's a starting point and we can go forward from there. We involve our clients very heavily in decision-making, you know, as we're going through things, but we can also speed up the process for folks. Yeah. A lot of times I've got personal experience with my own family trying to do clean outs and things that I've been doing professionally for almost 5 years. And just because I'm too close, it takes me about five times the amount of time. I had literally looked at a bedroom that I had cleaned up and I looked at myself in the mirror and I was like, you are slow. Way slower than you should be. So, you know, again, it's another piece of why we do what we do is we've got just enough distance that we can go through things quickly. But we still involve everybody. We make sure we don't get rid of things that, that nobody wants to get rid of.
Absolutely. And I also want to emphasize too, we're not like robots where we're coming in and we're not like absorbing. I mean, every single day we're absorbing the trauma or the emotions or the situation. So one of the challenging things after you do this over and over again is also finding ways where we can take care of ourselves, where we make sure that our employees are taking care of themselves from a mental health perspective, from a rest perspective. If there is a specific situation that is just hitting harder more than others, let's talk about it. Let's figure out what you need because we want to be able to show up fresh and 100% for everybody, but we can't do that unless we take care of ourselves as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it takes a special type of person to be able to do something like this and maybe either A, not let it, you know, affect the rest of your life or just, you know, just, yeah, be able to to have that compassion with working with people day in and day out and not letting it be just desensitize you, you know, to everything. Cause I mean, you know, we're talking very vaguely, but I know, you know, it's things like suicide, big blood cleanups. Like I just can't imagine that there's, it's not hard to be shocked by some of the scenarios, right? But yet you still have to be a human being about, you know, everything that you're facing. So without too many details, right? Is there anything you can share, right, about some experiences, some cleanup scenarios, you know, something that kind of the audience might be able to either relate to or understand what it is that you guys actually do?
Yeah, when we were talking about what kind of stories we could share for this, there was one job that stood out among most because it hit so many different levels of what we do as a profession. It has a real estate component to it. And we were able to just go above and beyond like we try to do in every job, but we were really able to help this family. So the situation is we got a phone call and we were told that we needed to respond very quickly. And the phone call was from law enforcement. We have really good relationships with law enforcement, so we can come out and help quickly. And initially we were just told that we were there to unfortunately retrieve some deceased animals, some dogs that had passed away in a home. And the only access I remember very distinctly was around back in the house. And as soon as we opened the door, without giving too much detail, when you arrive on site for an unattended death and a decomposition, there's a very, very specific odor. And you'll never forget it once you smell it the first time. And as soon as we opened the door, we knew immediately this was more than what we were initially told on the phone. So we always make sure we're suited up. We have the proper PPE just to even do an estimate and figure out what we're getting into because it's an unknown space for us. That's a safety issue. And we want to make sure we're safe going through. So we ended up discovering and targeting the specific room where the individual had passed away, and our instincts were correct there. And the really heartbreaking emotional part of this was they were a dog breeder, and this person had been deceased for several weeks. So unfortunately, the animals passed because they were malnourished and there was no one there to take care of them. And that really pulled on us from a heartstrings perspective, just we're all human, right? No one, seeing that was really hard. On the positive side, we were able to rescue a cat that was in the house that had survived, and we were able to donate all of the kennels and everything that we found and supplies to animal control, and we're able to pass those on and disinfect that as well, and the cat was able to be rescued. But as we looked through the house, we knew this job was also going to be bigger than remediating the room with the decomposition. It was also very hoarded. So there were a lot of components here. And next of kin was enjoying a wonderful vacation in Disney World. They were not in North Carolina and in the space at the time. So they were really shocked on vacation. It was a big deal and it was something that they weren't expecting. And it was a cousin. So it wasn't an immediate next of kin, but it was a cousin that was responsible for all of this. So what we did, we got in touch with them. And the first step is to immediately build that trust. And trust doesn't happen overnight, right? This is something that you have to build over time and you have to show with action and you have to show with compassion and following up with your words. And as we start remediating the decomposition, we also started finding really important paperwork and documents and anything that can help them start piecing together the estate and what is owed, and also trying to figure out what does homeowner's insurance look like? Because you often don't know what type of homeowner's insurance your loved ones have. You don't know what the policy includes. You don't know if it's up to date. And so those documents are very important to find as well. And do you want to talk about what you did going above and beyond?
Yeah. So this particular client, he was like, we're pretty estranged. We really don't know 100% of what we're going to do. And the first contact, they didn't even know what was going on in the house. So either they were shocked or confused or whatever when law enforcement called. So we found ourselves having to explain here's what we're dealing with, here's what we're going on. But we started finding bank statements, insurance documentation, all these things. And I actually was able to put together a spreadsheet of most current debts just to get them going as they were trying to open up the estate. We were also able to try to treat the paperwork because, again, that particular odor that Krista was describing tends to stick to things a little bit more. I think we probably all have kind of a little bit of an evolutionary key to that odor, which just says stay away. But we were able to treat that paperwork as well in such a way that they could take it off and, again, turn it over to the attorneys, go through things as we were moving some of the obvious garbage, debris, things like that from the home from the hoarding perspective of things. Do you want to talk about the contents?
The contents, there were antiques all over this place. And I am not I cannot tell you what is like Victorian 16th century. Like there were phrases being thrown around by our team that, you know, just has background and experience in looking for things. And I'm just thinking, I don't know what you're saying, but it sounds important. Yeah. And I trust you all. And so we were able to connect with an antique shop in the local community. And it turns out not only do they obviously have an eye out for these types of really valuable possessions to flip and turn and resell, but they were also flipping homes as well. And this was that perfect property for them to take a look at and see, is this something that we can help take off their hands and then also take a look and restore and resell some of these antiques that were just so beautiful. And it was paintings, it was chairs, it was furniture. There were just so many little items that were just hidden under the hoard in this house that we were able to disinfect. But then also the family could strike up a deal with this company to quickly move the property, get a really good value for the property. And we were able to make those connections for everybody really quickly. Yeah. So that was, it was a very big job. It took probably a week to go through everything. And we also worked closely with insurance to cover it. They covered the decomposition, and then they covered all of our work with the hoarding situation. And it was one of those jobs where you walk away and you know you did right.
Yeah. With that, you know, while looking you up, I had no idea that this could be a homeowner's insurance sort of situation. How does that work? So someone reaches out directly to you. And then I'm sure while billing is happening and all that stuff, I mean, do you bring up, hey, this can be a claim that's made? Like, what's the kinds of ins and outs and structures on making a claim like this?
Yeah.
So we typically talk about that really at the initial call. Any type of biohazard remediation, if somebody has died by suicide, if it's an unattended death, where there are health hazards involved. I tell people, you know, I don't know what your policy states, but in the vast majority of cases, we've found homeowners insurance will cover this. What we try to do, again, families going through traumatic situations, we'll try to say, listen, all I need, and by the way, I don't need anything at all. At first, again, like Krista said, we help first. We'll figure out the rest of this stuff on down the road. We just want it to be safe enough for family to either, you know, continue to occupy the house, or if it's somebody, you know, where it's family coming in from out of town, we just try to make it safe first. We'll get all the insurance information later. But what we try to do is we try to open the claim on the family's behalf and just kind of get the process started. It's just taking one little thing off somebody's plate. Sure. You know, when there's something like this happening, as far as situations where it's more primarily like a hoard or something like that, historically that hasn't covered this quite as much. But I tell everybody the answer is always no if you don't ask. So talk to your agent, talk to your company. Again, for the hoarding side of things, usually if there's not some sort of health hazard created by one of these other situations, it's not historically been covered very often, but, you know, ask. There's
absolutely
nothing wrong with that.
And I mean, it's most often covered with biohazards. So when we're talking about, you know, anything to do with unattended deaths, if someone dies by suicide, if there's a blood spill, maybe someone is on blood thinners and they accidentally hit their head and they thankfully get help, but there is something to clean up. That will be covered most likely if you have homeowners insurance. There are some nuances to consider if you're a renter, and then, you know, there's renter's insurance, which covers the property inside the place. But if we needed to do more, if it's a situation where we need to remove tile, remove drywall, anything that's part of the structure, then we would need to talk to the property manager to see what they would like to do. So there are some nuances there. Unfortunately, at this time, it is very, very uncommon to get assistance for hoarding situations. Oftentimes, insurance looks at that as you did it to yourself. They don't recognize it as a mental health issue or a trauma response, anything like that. So there are things that we do where we talk about, you know, programs where what pace would you like us to go at? Is it all in one, or would you like us to do maybe one room at a time? Or would you like us to come by once a month or once a week? And we try to be flexible with what makes most sense for them emotionally and financially. We also have some financing programs where they can sign up, get pre-approved, and then we can work through things that way. Mm-hmm. And so we try to be as flexible as possible, and we try to make sure that, yes, the number one question always on anything is, how much is this going to cost me? And so we try to have as many options as possible, because we also know that what we do is so specialized. It's not the cheapest thing either, because of the equipment we have to have, the chemicals, the processes, certifications, and making sure that we're trained and ready to go.
Sure. Sure. So with that, like meth remediation, you know, as being in real estate, I understand that process pretty well. But again, while digging into your company, I see fentanyl remediation. What the heck is that? Like, I've never heard of that before. Like, I know what fentanyl is, and I know we're facing some challenges there, but I understand why meth needs a cleanup, but why fentanyl? Like, what's the deal there?
Sure. So fentanyl in and of itself is more dangerous as a synthetic opioid, carfentanil, all those different types of things. And they're out there more and more. We sort of slid into this space. A lot of times we're dealing with the aftermath of an overdose or something like that. And so a couple of the office owners in Bio1, one in particular, really dove headfirst into this. He was former narcotics officer and just got pretty heavily into this. And as the crisis has grown, we've kind of found, hey, there's a need for this. And so there is a group that we have specific training from. There's a specific chemical that it takes care of a lot of things. It would take care of meth, though you may be aware you can't use chemicals to change the meth chemical. You actually have to physically remove it here in Colorado. There's none of these regulations that exist currently in Colorado. And so
for fentanyl remediation.
Yeah, for fentanyl remediation. So at any rate, we've taken training on how to do it. We use a Department of Defense licensed chemical that, you know, it happens to break fentanyl down and create environmentally friendly byproducts. So it's not like we're taking one hazard and making it into other hazards. What we use actually breaks stuff down. You know, as far as the calls we get, sometimes it's from families. We find a lot more that we've been doing a lot more work for law enforcement agencies. We did some work for a group up in the mountains. They got in a foot chase and the suspect threw a bag up in the air that two or three of their officers ran through. They got in their vehicles. They started feeling woozy. You know, we ended up doing decontamination on a few of the vehicles. Fortunately, everybody was okay in the situation. But it's just one of those things that's getting out there. It's getting scarier. We heavily advise folks, just like with the meth process, we heavily advise testing by a certified industrial hygienist, both to try to make sure that we know what we're dealing with, but also to prevent people from having to spend a whole lot of money that, you know, maybe they don't have to. I mean, we get a lot of calls for theft recovery vehicles. We're working on multiple situations, including an Airbnb right now that's an active scene that we're trying to work with a homeowner on. Somebody came in to the Airbnb, This was meth, not fentanyl in this particular case, but you know, now it's a meth affected property. So what can we do for that homeowner, for that management company, to try to work through all the state's process as quickly as possible, but make sure that they're not putting future tenants in danger? And so again, you know, it's something like that. You talk about property managers, that there's a lot of moving parts. And I'm sure as you're aware on the meth remediation side, unfortunately, nothing happens particularly quickly. It's not like some of the other hazards where, you know, we're only in a house for 24 to 48 hours or something like that. You know, there's testing, there's cleaning. The cleaning takes a while. Yeah. Then you have to retest. And, you know, if there's any areas that are still hot, you still have to go back and stuff like that. So it's, I anticipate, you know, in the future, as this opioid crisis continues, we're probably going to start to see some regulations come into place where there are, you know, certain thresholds that you have to hit and things of that nature. But it, you know, it's very dangerous at a very low quantity in its pure form. And, you know, we all get to see the stories on the news about, you know, how it impacts our community.
Well, and it's one of those scary things too. If you're a realtor or, you know, if you're trying to invest in a property and it's all sight unseen, you don't know what you're walking into. Nope. You have no idea what has happened in that house before. And one of the things, you know, several years ago when Matt did the training for fentanyl, we were both very uneducated in the sense of, you know, you hear in the news, fentanyl's so dangerous. And, it's really very, it will impact you, especially when you breathe it in. It's respiratory. The gentleman, Matt, talks about this in training, where if he put like a sugar cube in his hand, that doesn't mean he's going to get diabetes. Like the skin isn't going to be absorbing that sugar cube right there. If you have fentanyl in your hand, you're not going to have an overdose. It's when it's actually been used and it's gone airborne, or when the powder's gone airborne and you're breathing it in. And then when you talk about, you know, specifically with kids and children, you know, their immune systems and their ability to fight off something like that is such a lower threshold than adults. And you think about, you know, just a few little specks can take an adult down. We really want to make sure they're safe environments too for kids. And you don't know what's airborne unless you get it tested.
Yeah. Wow. It's, yeah, stuff, once again, you don't think of until you get
the call. Don't leave your homes. It's a scary world out there.
Right? It absolutely is, which, you know, on the business side now, I know, you know, my wife owns a landscaping company, has a lot of challenges with employees right now. Contractors that I know, I have extreme challenges with hiring, I'm going to say skilled labor, but let's be real. I mean, my wife has ads out there for like $25 an hour to start. And like, no one is applying here in Denver. It's unbelievable. So she gave up, right? And it's her and one other person, and they're like, threw their hands up and they said, screw it. Like, I'm not going to try to grow this thing. We're just going to stay small. And I know a lot of contractors have fallen into that position. But your company takes it one step further. It's not just, hey, we need you to, you know, be a laborer. Like, there's a lot more to it. So what are you guys finding as far as being able to employ people, right? And then having a good team in place with such specific situations. Like, is that a challenge in Denver for you guys, or are we just in this specific boat here in the contracting world that, you know, is by itself?
I think one of the things that works in our favor is that a lot of people don't know that we exist, and that's a good thing, because it means that you haven't gone through, you know, certain traumatic events, or, you know, open the door to a house you hadn't been in 10 years and you find something that's very surprising. So when I talk to people just in general about what we do, about 20% of people will say, ugh, get away from me. But there are a lot of people that are really fascinated with what we do. And so sometimes we have people seek us out. We have everything from, you know, just folks looking to try to apply to work with us. We've had students from forensics programs reach out, because they, you know, it kind of builds on which way they're going. We've had college kids that have worked for us that, because of our culture, have done dissertations on our corporate culture, because it was unique. So, you know, we do have some people seek us out. As far as the skilled side of things, that's one of the beauties of this, is there's not really a program or a degree or anything that really points you in the direction of crime and trauma scene cleaning. So I tell people we're really looking for three things. I'm looking for somebody who has immaculate attention to detail, somebody who has an immense care for their work and their community. They care about what they do. And then somebody who's coachable, because at the end of this, you know, there are some certifications that will put folks through, some initially, some as they grow with the business. But by and large, you know, this is an on the job training. We're going to teach you how to do the things that you need to do. And, you know, the people who have been successful in this place, in this space, it's been all over the board. We've had firefighters and first responders who've been excellent at this. We've had social workers who are phenomenal because they can connect with people. You know, we've had a lot of college folks who come in and work for us. We're actually about to have somebody come back for another summer. Mm-hmm. So we're really excited about that. And the fact that we could kind of build that culture that I think a lot of people feel like is missing, or people are cynical about corporate culture in general. And so that's what we're looking for, is the people fit first. The skill piece we can build into. And for some people, it's going to be, you know, fairly on the unskilled side, but that's still a component of what we do. We still have to move heavy things from point A to point B. And, you know, I don't want to ever intimidate somebody into thinking, hey, listen, you're going to be dealing with a crying family member who just can't believe that the house is in a certain condition. You know, not everybody has to do that. So we have different roles, and we're always looking for people who are interested in this space. You know, I mean, we're always looking full-time, part-time, because there are ebbs and flows to what we do. Like I said, you know, the way the way everything looked like Monday this week on our schedule is totally not how it turned out. So it's definitely a different thing that we do every day. But yeah, I mean, I think we're lucky because the space is so unique, that it's not laying tile or brick or framing or, you know, those classical things where there's so many different options.
Yeah. I would say too, as small business owners, I think you feel the pain of, it's really hard to offer full benefits. It's hard to say, hey, we're going to send you to, like, you can work at, you know, a fast food restaurant right now and make $19, $20 an hour.
Yeah.
And they're going to give you benefits. They're maybe going to contribute to an education. They're going to be able to provide you things that just small business is hard to provide that, especially when you have a small team. And so we keep trying to look out for ways that we can at least offer flexibility. We can offer, it's almost like we know we're small and we know that that's a disadvantage for us. So where can we shine that these other places can't? And that's a constant conversation for us, especially with our employee handbooks and making sure that we're, I guess, trying to be as sexy as possible to work at, knowing that life can be really expensive here in Colorado. We have to be mindful from a business perspective, payroll costs are a huge chunk of the pie for small businesses. And so as minimum wages increase and as competition from other, you know, jobs increase, whether it's fast food, whether it's working, you know, at the Walmart or Target, we have to be mindful too of costs, because at some point that will get passed to the customer, and the customer's already going through too much. And we know we're already a specialized service. So I think, you know, similar to a landscaping business or similar to other contractor businesses, that's something that we're always thinking of and trying to talk about. Where does the pain hit and how do we overcome it?
Yeah, I know. It's you wonder at what point, like, things break a little bit, you know. It's tough to that. I was just talking about it this morning, you know, Federal and Alameda area houses going for $500,000 as a starter home. And you're like, you got to make 125 plus a year to afford that house. Like, who, you know, how many of those people are there and how far can we go? But you look to other cities and they've gone much further. San Francisco, Toronto is like crazy expensive. No one knows it, but you're like, you know, $2 million for a 600 square foot condo is not uncommon in Toronto. Like, so we have that question all the time. How far can we go? And, you know, even though there's a lot more people moving here to the Denver area, to Colorado, like, it just seems like we're at this constant labor shortage where we're having to, you know, I mean, the market's doing what the market's doing. right? Yeah. We got to compete against each other, compete for employees, things like that. So there are some benefits to it, but yeah, it is a big challenge. So with most of your stuff, I mean, I think I can get my head wrapped around, like, hey, meth cleanup, fentanyl cleanup, like remediation, regulations, testing, stuff like that. But are there any other compliance regulation pieces to different sort of cleanups, whether, you know, some biohazard sort of situation? Like, is there a pass test sort of deal for a project to be completed for you guys?
Mm-hmm. So from a regulatory perspective, there's not a whole lot on the crime and trauma side. I would say the biggest piece of regulation is making sure that you handle the disposal of whatever that we're generating appropriately. And so everything in Colorado is considered regulated medical waste from these scenes. And so we'll kind of break down personal property, structural materials and stuff like that, and make sure that, you know, what is considered solid waste is solid waste, what is considered regulated medical waste is processed accordingly. So that's probably the most major piece. We do run into the asbestos regulations a fair amount. Again, you're probably super aware of them, but if you're removing more than 32 square feet of wallboard, you have to have the home test. It doesn't matter when it was built or any of that. I believe we deal mostly with the wallboard removal, but if I remember, it's like 55 feet of, or some amount of feet of linear pipe. And if a material could fill a 55-gallon drum above that threshold, you have to have testing. So we partner with other organizations in the metro area and some outside to make sure that we can kind of hand people off to do that sort of thing. You know, from a training perspective, that's one of the beauties of Bio1. It's been around for what, 20 years?
It was officially created as a franchise business in 2010. So the founder who started Bio1 started in like the late 90s. But it was dish gloves and what you could buy, you know, off the counter. And it was probably the most unsafe environment that you could think of. But there was no map for this. So now, being a part of a franchise system, there's 140 Bio1 offices across the country. There is a training program that we do internally and that we maintain and make sure that all of our technicians are up to date on. And then also as part of that training, and a big piece that everyone needs to get if you're doing this type of work, is the any OSHA standards you need to follow and comply with, especially the bloodborne pathogens certifications. And that's an annual thing that you have to stay up on every single year. And then for us, a lot of it is safety first for our team, whether that's physical safety, whether that's making sure that there aren't any rips in your suit, that everything is protected properly, your duct tape's on point. And so looking out for each other, that's something that we really rigorously, I can't say that.
Rigorously.
That's something that we are so on top of, because we want our employees to feel safe. We want our employees to feel like they can do their job without worrying about, you know, accidentally getting poked by a needle or being exposed to something that they're not aware of. So,
yeah, no, it's a very real concern. I mean, my wife running a landscape company, you know, they had a close scenario downtown a couple of years ago. She's like, nope, we're not working downtown anymore. Like, it's just it just hit a little too close to home, you know. Everybody's fine, but yeah, it just raises the question. So advice for homeowners, right? Someone going through a testing, trying time, I'm sure besides the obvious of like, hey, just reach out to us, like advice to homeowners that don't know what to do with a property that they don't know what to do with.
Absolutely. I know a lot of people, especially if they don't know what to do, they don't know their services exist, they don't know what resources are available. The first instinct is, well, I guess I got to roll up my sleeves and do it myself. And the biggest advice is take a deep breath. You're going through a lot and there are resources out there. If it's something that police are involved in, there's often victim advocates. Victim advocates are part of police departments, or there's also nonprofit organizations that have victim advocates that can come in and they can connect with you emotionally, but they can also give you resource guides and they can tell you, you know, here are some good funeral service options. Here are some things you're going to need to know for estate planning. Here's some things you need to know, you know, whatever the next steps are for what you need to do. They have it and they've done it and they've helped people through it. And they're trained to be there for you from an emotional perspective. And for us, BioOne's biohazard companies are on those lists. So in that particular area, if you need biohazard remediation, there are a list of people, including ourselves, that you can call and you can get free estimates. You can, you know, our company responds 24/7 for emergency situations. When you call the number on the website, you're getting a hold of Matt and I. Don't be afraid to wake us up. We're used to it and we want to help, type of thing. And so there are resources and there are people out there. The worst thing you could do is try to do it yourself. And the reason being is because you could be exposing yourself to further trauma. This could be, I mean, you're emotionally connected to the situation or to the person. And it could also be very dangerous. You don't know what's in, you know, someone's system. You don't know what you could possibly be exposing yourself to. And then also just from a perspective of why we're so good at what we do is we often describe our work as like peeling an onion. We can see everything on surface level, but we don't just clean surface level. We need to figure out where everything has traveled, where everything has gone. So if you're looking at a tile floor, you know, on this side of the room, you can see the topical impacts, but if it goes through the grout or if there's cracks in something underneath the surface, depending on the slant of the house, it could run. And you won't know that until you actually start doing the job and you start peeling back the layers. And it's really important to have a thorough remediation at that point. So yeah. That's probably what comes to mind for me.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, Krista, Matt, we're going to have, of course, your contact information below in the description. And ladies and gentlemen, you heard it from them. Call them like nights, days, weekends, 24 hours a day as this stuff comes up. These are incredibly caring people. And feel free, you know, I know being in a different industry myself, real estate, you always want people to lean on you a little bit more because sometimes there's easier answers than you know, can possibly think of. So don't be afraid to ask the questions. Krista, Matt, thank you again. It's been phenomenal. And ladies and gentlemen, until the next time, happy housing.